Greetings, everyone. This is Brother Baba Wetapha right here in Oklahoma City. I'm your host with the most. And again, my co-host, your boy, will be here shortly. But until that time, let's listen to a little bit of Whitney Houston, as you know, which is my favorite theme song. And then we will definitely get back to y'all. So don't go away. Enjoy the wonderful tune of the late, great Whitney Houston. I believe.
Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for heroes. People need someone to look up to. Never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me. Be
late Whitney Houston. This is Baba Wetapa right here in Oklahoma City, your host with the most. My co-host, Mayat, your boy is not here yet, but at the same time, I'm gonna keep you entertained until she gets here. Welcome, everyone. I want to talk a little bit tonight as the subject is school to prison pipeline. Why are they targeting our youth? This is a very important topic. One, on a number of levels, is scary and quite naturally worth discussing because we're talking about our youth making up the primary target of individuals who are going to incarcerate or become a part of the incarcerated system of government, whether it's in any state, no matter where you are. We're talking about the juvenile facilities where they start and then migrate on to the county jail level, to the prison level, for various crimes committed within their communities. So I want everybody to know exactly what I'm trying to talk about here, because it's very important that we know that the federal, state, and local governments are targeting our youth for incarceration. The school-to-prison pipeline is very real, everyone. You hear that topic all the time. You hear it discussed, school-to-prison pipeline. Think about that. From school to prison, there's a pipeline there that directly targets our youth and prepares them to become the next prisoner, because the old prison system today, as we see it, a lot of the older convicts are dying. They're never going to get out, and a lot of them are dying in prison, and this is creating space that, and occupying the beds are no longer being occupied to 100 degrees or to the extent of 95%, so they're going to be looking for new heads, and the way they do that is they target our youth who are going to be adults soon, and they get ready to prepare to send them to an adult facility. So as your host tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about that and also the disparity in incarcerating our youth as far as the African Americans in the diaspora is concerned right here in the Western Hemisphere of America. So again, y'all bear with me. Again, I'm the only one here tonight, but at the same time, I'm going to give it to you as if I had a large crowd of people here following me. So again, bear with me if you would. Thank y'all again. I'm sorry, that's my phone that went off. Black youth are more than four times likely to be detained or committed into a juvenile facility as their white peers. According to nationwide data collected in October 2019 and recently released, in 2015, black youth incarcerated rate was 5.0 times as high as their white peers. An all-time peak, that ratio fell 4-4 at a 13% decline. Now, when we talk about the disparaged treatment in incarcerated blacks versus their counterparts, which is whites, this is very scary, and it targets blacks on every level, whether they are incarcerated as a juvenile in a juvenile facility or rather incarcerated as an adult in an adult facility. Blacks are four times likely to be incarcerated than their counterpart of the European race. And this is not by accident, everyone. This is by design. Now, in juvenile facilities, including 1,510 detention centers, listen carefully, residential treatment centers, group homes, and youth prisons, 36,479 youth as of October 2019. Now, we're going on 3 years ago. In the juvenile facilities, listen carefully, it contained or held 36,479 youth as of October 2019. This data did not include the 659 people under 18 in prisons and year-round that ended in 2019, or the estimated 2,900 people under 18 in jails or during mid-2019. So what I'm trying to get at, y'all, is that this does not include the 653 people under the age of 18 who are in the prison systems today, right today. 653 under the age of 18 is incarcerated in the prison system today, and more than likely they were certified as an adult because the courts in the juvenile system felt that their overall capacity was incapable of being reformed as juveniles, so they treated them as an adult because maybe the crime fit that mold as far as the government is concerned. So let us understand that. 41% of our youth in placements and that 41% of youth in placement are black. Yet we only make up 12% of the overall national population. Think about that now. We make up 12% of the overall population, but we're 41% of our youth are in juvenile detention facilities and detention centers. Okay, group homes and things of that nature. Now, our black makeup about, our black youth, that is, they make up about 15% of all youth across the United States, all right? So now, our black youth are more than likely to be in custody than white youth in every state but one, Hawaii. Listen to what I'm saying now. In virtually every state of in the Union of the United States, blacks are more likely to be in custody, more so than whites, in every state but Hawaii. Between 2015 and 2019, juvenile placements fell from 24%. During these years, black youth placements declined faster than white youth placements, 54% versus 36%, resulting in a smaller but still considerable disparity. No matter how you decrease the numbers, everyone, all my listening audience, no matter how you look at the picture, blacks are going to be targeted for incarceration more so than any other race in the world. And I'm telling y'all, I'm saying this here because we need to know who our real enemy are and who is the real culprits that's behind this racial discrimination that's going on with our African-American community on every level. When you start targeting our youth with the school-to-prison pipeline, you're basically interfering with the family value structure, the family system, and the family structure. Because when you send a child to prison or jail and in a juvenile home, what you're doing is that you're breaking down the family unity and the family cohesiveness. Now mother has to try and find a lawyer for the child. She has to now try and put money on his book so that he can eat canteen or whatever the case may be. Okay. So those things are what we want to deal with now. And she also has to worry about whether he's going to be protected or safe in that new setting and environment. So I say this is very legitimately concerned and is very much is on a lot of our minds, because when we think about our youth, we think about how many of them are not graduating from high school. We think about how many of them being suspended from school. We think about how many of them are now on drugs. We think about how many of them in gangs. These things, they all play a negative role in their lives and basically compromises the outcome of a non-successful life as an adult. So I want everyone to think about that. Nationally, then, the youth placement rate was 114 per 100,000 people. Yes, our youth were incarcerated, 114 people per 100,000. The black youth placement rate was 315 per 100,000. So more than the national average level of blacks being incarcerated on a national level, the national level of forced blacks being incarcerated is 114 per, actually, youth in and of itself, a whole youth. 114 individuals per 100,000 people. These are youth. Now, the black youth placement rate was 315 per 100,000. Okay, now, when you compare that to only 72 per 100,000 for whites, look at the absorbing an amount of disparity here. This is not by accident, but by design. So the racial disparities, y'all, grows and grows and grows in each state as we speak. Yes, racial disparities grew more than 10% in 11 states and decreased by less than 10% in 23 states and the District of Columbia. I want all you to understand that what we're getting our numbers from Ronover, who is a clinical psychologist and sociologist, you may want to look him up, and he's just very profound, and I like the story he gives, and I like the numbers that I'm relating to y'all, and I like the research he's done, which also gives me an opportunity to give you the numbers, which is, again, is important to you so that you can start hopefully trying to figure out what the cause of your son or daughter's incarceration is and what you can do to deter them from a life of crime, and then possibly going to a adult jail or adult prison facility. Now let's look at a little bit here of the black-white youth placement rates per 100,000 in 2019. Now in Alabama, one of the most wickedest, most racist states still in the Union, around 294 black youth per 100,000 are incarcerated in juvenile facilities. On the other hand, the white counterpart is only 106 incarceration. Now think about this, y'all. We're only about 15% of our youth incarceration, but overall as a black nation here in the United States, we're 12% overall capacity. But when we talk about our youth, we're 15% as far as our youth are concerned. And yet, just like in the adult facilities, our youth are being targeted more so on a higher rate and level than their counterparts of whites. Now, in Arizona, you have about 240 per 100,000 that black youth are being incarcerated, where their counterpart white is 62 out of 100,000 youth being incarcerated. So it's in line with the prison system, the school-to-prison pipeline, targeting more so the African-American community, more so than any other nationality or ethnic group in the United States. There's no question about it, because no matter where you go, you're going to find such disparities that it's really frightening and really makes a person wonder what in the world is going on. Why is it so important? Well, it's like this here. As long as you can continue to troll the African-American birth rate, as long as you can control the African-American job rate, as long as you can control the African-American education, housing, employment, and so forth and so on, you basically have them at your every beckoning call. And, you know, we have people in our government, our white supremacist government, who understands this. And until we get a better feel and a better hold on our environment and what we want to do and need to do, we're going to be going nowhere fast. So I just wanted to share this with y'all tonight, because if we don't get a handle on our youth, if we don't have a better understanding of what is going on in our environment, I believe that the African-American race, now don't take me wrong and don't take me lightly when I say this, I believe that we are fast becoming on the endangered species list as a human beings, something that you would only track down when you're talking about fowl of the earth or some four-legged animal. And when you think about gun violence, when you think about gang violence, when you think about homelessness, when you think about disparity and incarceration, poverty, I think I state a good case for that. So I want everybody to know that. Now, in Colorado, now this is really a frightening one. For every 100,000 youth, 557 blacks are locked up, where only their counterpart, white youth are locked up 76 out of 100,000 people. Now, listen to that, y'all. Are you kidding me? In Colorado. So this also explains why Brother Omar today is incarcerated there, like so many unfortunate people his color, is because it is in line with the overall incarcerated rate and the projected rate of locking blacks up versus not locking up whites. Now, if we go further, let's go down to Minnesota. Per 100,000, 621 youth are locked up. Per 100,000, only 73 locked up in juvenile facilities. Then we go to Nebraska. Of 100,000 youth, 641 per 100,000 are blacks, where only 69 out of 100,000 are whites. Now, y'all, are y'all kidding me? This shows me that blacks in these various institutions and cities that I spoke about are locked up between 6 to 7 times more than their counterparts in just those three states alone. Now, think about that. So that tells me that the laws, policies, and practices within those governments are targeting our African-American youth, who, without question, man the lockup, jail, juvenile facility, and prison facilities in those states, as well as other states as well. There's just no question about it. There are other high numbers of blacks that are exposed to harsh treatment in the other facilities in various states, like in Philadelphia. Out of every 100,000, there are 413 black youth that are incarcerated. Well, out of the 100,000, only 73 of their counterpeers or their counterpart whites are locked up. I think, y'all, this is something, and when you add up all these states, it comes to 315 youth black youth out of every 110,000 are locked up, where overall the lockup rate for white youth is only 72 out of 100,000. This is very frightening. This is very disturbing. This is very racist. This is very unreal. This is very discriminatory, and we need to do something about this overall disparity and racist treatment. How in the world can we support a government system that targets its black citizens on every level like this here, y'all? They know, just like Whitney Houston said in our song, our children, our future, teach them well and let them lead the way. Well, how can we as a family, as a nation, teach our black youth the right way to go when you have distractions lingering on every way he turned, northeast, west, or south, in his environment that's laying there to gobble him up and spit him out into a harsher reality than he or his family even thought possible, distracting him and derailing him and forcing him into a life of crime? We're not just going to say that our ghetto communities were set up like this here to be successful, because they weren't. You had redlining that was going on. Simply what that means, you didn't have federal school grants and other business grants and things like that that went into the black community. No, they were excluded due to the redlining system that was designed to cripple the physical, economic, and intellectual liftment of the black community, where the white community was soaring in these various grants and bank loans and things of this nature, and savings and loans companies and things, where, again, black were left out. No matter how you were or how rich you were still targeted as a black person who had no respect or any recognition by government, because with your advancement, with the money that in your community at that time, you would have more than likely, and again, this is agreed upon, you would have more than likely advanced your community and been able to put more of a black youth to work. You would have had more counselors that's really geared toward and targeting our youth and giving them a alternative to a life of crime, drugs, gangs, so forth and so on. So it is these things, it's very important that we understand these things, y'all. This is not something we need to take light of, because we are tired and fed up as African Americans here in the Western Hemisphere, in the diaspora of the United States, of Snakes of America. This is why I call me United Snakes. I think just listening to me, not only on this show, y'all, but on various shows that y'all heard me speak on, I think y'all know, too, that we are very profoundly aware of our environment and the evils and wickedness and the atrocities that's being visited upon our youth, especially in the black community, as far as even as adults are concerned. And there needs to be a coming out on all of our parts to address this wicked concern. If we do not take time to address this wicked concern, then I am afraid this is going to continue. The continued rate of police brutality, police killings, and police shootings is very, very frightening. As what I've done my research, as far as our youth are concerned, the average black male is not going to reach the age of 24 years old before they would have met with some tragic situation, as police brutality, being killed by another person on the street, accident, or even in gang violence. So this is something that we need to think about, y'all, because as our youth are going on, you have to realize the older of us are dying out. And the purpose of preserving our lifespan is to have our children to take over where we as adults leave off. But in other words, for that to happen, we first of all have to believe in ourselves and to believe that we have the necessary framework and frame of mind in education and housing and mental capacities to deal with our problems as we are faced with them. So, again, we have to, first of all, sit our youth down, explain to them, explore the ideas with them to do what we can to make sure that they are not a target of this white eugenic system that's designed to cripple and or maim, to incarcerate and even kill them in a lot of instances. So the school-to-prison pipeline, everyone, is very real. And I just want all of us to know that, because it is very, very real. And until we get a handle on it, and this goes for our youth on every level. I'm not just saying just for blacks. I'm mostly targeting blacks now, because, as you see, we are more so targeted by more so than any other ethnic group in the United States. So this is why we're talking about the subject of African Americans being the subject and targets of incarceration, beginning with our youth on up to our adults, where we are incarcerated more so than any other race and do longer sentences than any other race. So I want y'all to marinate on that just for a minute, because we have something that we need to really get off our chest, and that is standing together in one, in unity, in peace, in humility, because we all live in the same environment. We were all created by one God. We were all given an opportunity to stand on our firm foundation, to stand on our principles. And the only way we can stand on our principle is that we have zero tolerance for racial discrimination on whatever level it comes on. We cannot no longer allow redlining. We can no longer allow governments to discriminate against our children. We can no longer allow police to shoot us down with our hands up. We can no longer allow the welfare and even Social Security system to delve off into this racist modus operandi, which is criminalizing our youth based upon even school infractions. We know that blacks are more or three times likely to be suspended based upon some school infraction, and we know that nine times out of ten they're likely to have the cops called on them for some so-called criminal behavior, which at that time in reality isn't criminal behavior, but the authorities like to look at it as being a leading pathway to criminal behavior being developed from that student. We have to develop new trends, y'all. I mean, this applications of discriminatory practices and discriminatory discipline that's being handed out even in our schools once again today is, again, frightening. And it gives the family a headache. It gives the youth a question as to their validity. It causes doubt to be framed into their mindset whether they're important enough or if they're feeble-minded, as Margaret Singer and the eugenics movement describe many often blacks as being feeble-minded, useless, tragic, or non-conforming, radicals. You know, those different terms are designed to cripple and maim and cause disabilities to surface among the black community. We also have to realize, too, that because of their poverty, many of our children today have learning disabilities. That's a fact. Okay. They have a history of poverty, abuse, and neglect, go to bed often without being fed, slapped around by the father or mother. Mother and dad is gone all night out partying, leaving the kids at the house by themselves. And again, they're waking up hungry, having to go to school hungry and things. You know, we've seen the totality of food services that schools are now maintaining and developing and adopting so that children can eat when they go to school for breakfast and lunch as well. These people are targeted as far as the black community is concerned, and they are isolated, punished, and even pushed out and told, hey, you're nothing to us. They're planting that seed of doubt into our youth's mind. And they have to already be exposed to an already terrible or traumatic, explosive relationship in the family home already. So, again, this is why a lot of our youth are disruptive even in the schools, because they're learning these traits at home. Let's not fake it up. This is real, y'all, because this is very, very real, and we should have to know how to deal with those disparities, with the discriminatory practices, with the racist practices, where our students are concerned. Public school enrollments, y'all. Whites are 51% of public school enrollment overall, nationally, where blacks are only 16% of the national average. Now, listen to what I'm saying here. Whites make up 51% of the public school enrollment. Blacks make up 16% of the public school enrollment. However, multiple suspensions regarding the two groups, blacks make up 42% of the majority of times that they are being suspended, where whites only make up 31% of the multiple suspensions. So if you take up the swing here, being only 16% of the public school enrollment, yet blacks are suspended for 42%, where whites are suspended 31%. Again, blacks are, again, more than likely, two times likely to be suspended or gather suspensions than their white counterparts. And they're more than likely are going to expect and or receive a harsher punishment than white students in their public schools. I mean, y'all, this is a fact. We have to represent the facts as they are. Okay? Black students are expelled or suspended three times more likely than white students. Three times. And you have to wonder, are we really that bad? What are the intricacies that causes our youth to act so irresponsibly? In some cases, that we got to blame our own selves. We're family. The violations that a lot of our kids get suspended for is being tardy and maybe got into a fight, or they maybe didn't get a passing grade. They're not attentive to their studies. Okay, all those things are very relevant, and I'm not saying let's play lightly, because to do so would not be fair to our youth, who need to be given credence and to be told and influenced that they can do and be the best that they can become. But the only other way we can make that happen is that we have to believe in ourselves, and we have to be educated in our own families, in our homes. And it starts with discipline in our homes. Discipline, many in our homes. I guess a lot of you know, just like I do, being raised in a black family, the child becomes a parent, and the parent becomes a child in many cases. And I'm not just saying that. That's a fact. I've read, I've done studies, I've talked to people, I've actually seen instances where family members or youth are telling the mom to shut up, or I'll slap you in your mouth, or I'll lock you in the car, or do something, whatever the case is. Yes, I've actually heard these things. I'm not just making that up. So we're afraid to discipline our kids now, because even the laws even prevent us from disciplining our children. And you can go to jail now for child abuse, which I think that's kind of out of place, because child abuse does not come with whippings. I mean, I've been getting whippings all my life when I was growing up. And it didn't deter me or make me a bad or wicked person, but what it did is did give me some kind of discipline, instead of me just being out, just running, doing what the heck I wanted at any level or all parts of the night. Those whippings did kind of give me a sense of strict punishment. It kind of gave me a sense of, well, I'm not going to be able to do this. If I did do this or that, I can expect that this is going to happen, or so forth, this discipline, this punishment or whatever. Students assigned to stricter middle schools are 3.2 percentage of points more likely to have been arrested. Listen carefully, y'all. Students assigned to stricter middle schools are 3.2% likely to have been arrested, where 2.5% points more likely to have been incarcerated as adults. The stricter the school is, the higher the chance of these kids becoming incarcerated. So that tells me then that they have a problem with anger management. So because that is a fact, rather than punishing these children, and we see their weaknesses, we should feed up off of that and give these children an opportunity to make amends and also to show their true worth. And we do that by reducing suspensions and fines and things of this nature, and by talking to them as if they're human beings, constructive people, that they can make a difference, that they're not feeble-minded, building their courage up. But a lot of children today still are forced to give in to peer pressure. We have to understand that peer pressure is a monster. I mean, it is real, it is live, and it's Memorex, y'all. It is real, real, real. So we have to try and talk to our kids and see what we can do. It is critical that we talk to our people, our children, y'all, because they need us, and we actually need them. They're dependent on us to help them cope with their inadequacies, to help them cope with being in poverty, poor, to help them cope with peer pressure, to help them cope with learning disabilities, to not shy away or belittle, laugh at them because they have some kind of mental disease or learning disability. We have to reach out to our youth and say, okay, You can be somebody. I know that you're important. I know that you can do better. But more than that, we have to be an example ourselves. You can't tell these people that they can be something and they're seeing that you're the most wicked person that they've ever come on or discovered or recognized. Children who attend schools with high suspension rates are significantly more likely to be arrested in jail as adults. Okay, and especially black and Hispanic boys. According to new research that shines a spotlight on the school-to-prison pipeline. So let me say that again. Listen carefully. Children who attend schools with high suspension rates are significantly more likely to be arrested in jail as adults, especially black and Hispanic boys, according to a new research that shines a spotlight on the school-to-prison pipeline. Let me let you marinate on that for a moment before I continue. Data have long shown that black and Hispanic students experience suspension and expulsion at much higher rates than white students, and that as adults, they are disproportionately represented in the county's prison system. Okay? We are likely to be subjected as students to a higher suspension rate, as well as adults being the likely ethnic groups, black and Hispanic, to man the jail and prison systems in the counties. And while research shows a correlation between high levels of education and low levels of criminal activity, there still exists little evidence on the role that individual schools can play in their students' future. All right. This is really interesting to me. I don't know about a lot of you, but it's really interesting to me because we need to put a dip into this crazy, fanatic way that our children seem to think that they do not have to mind or have to go to school, have to educate themselves. We're just not going to believe it because we know they do. So, again, y'all, let me take a break with Whitney Houston, and I'll be right back. Y'all stay with me, and this is Baba Wetaafa, Father of Many Nations, and I'll be back. Let's take a station break. Stay tuned. This is Whitney Houston. Right here in Oklahoma City. Again, we want to thank you all for tuning in with us. Our topic tonight is school-to-prison pipeline, and we're definitely talking about a subject that is important to all of us. And definitely we need to really take a grasp because our youth are being targeted to be our tomorrow's prisoners, and we need to get a grasp handle on that because if we don't, there are going to be more of our children who are going to be targeted and forced to be incarcerated. And it's going to break up our families, and this needs to be straightened out. This system needs to be looked into greatly. This judicial system in the United States greatly needs improving on every level. Now, researchers from Boston University, University of Colorado Boulder, and Harvard University sought to find whether there was casual connections between students who experienced strict school discipline in being arrested or incarcerated as an adult and whether attending stricter school influences criminal activity in adulthood. Now, let's think about it. Do stricter schools cause our youth to become less likely to succeed and more likely to become distraught, want to create crime, want to go to school, want to get suspended, get disciplined? I think it's like this here. Our findings show that early sense of school behavior causes increases in adult crime. Listen to what I'm saying. This is what the professors in the Boston University stated. Our findings show that early sense of school misbehavior causes increases in adult crime. So he's saying that misbehaviors in schools, which I can agree, because if you're not in school, then as a youth, what are you going to do? You're certainly not going to sit at home. You're going to get out in the street and basically carry your misbehaving mechanisms and behaviors to the streets, where you're going to more than likely, so you can show out before girls or show out for your buddy and your gang or whatever the case is, to show, hey, I can be different. In other words, it's all about attention grabbing. This is my own set. It's not what anybody told me, but I'm putting that together because I've talked to many people in that regard. So, again, y'all, we want to talk about how the researchers came to conclude that, again, misbehavior in our schools was the likelihood of causing high rate of crime in our schools based upon the mannerisms and behaviors of our youth, and we need to get a handle on it, because if not, there are going to be great problems. I see we have a guest that's popped up on the line. I think that's Nicole. Nicole, how are you doing today? Talk to me. Have you been listening to the show? What do you think about it?
Hello?
I guess she's still there, but again, we'll call her up here in a minute.
I'm listening, but I'm making dinner, so I'm just listening in.
Oh, look, she's making dinner, too. Oh, man, look, she about to make me cool this show off. I'm going to go get something to eat here.
But I'm listening. I just tuned in, but I'm listening.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll continue till you finish in there. Oh, good. A cooking dinner. That's great to hear that. So, y'all, we need to let everybody know, man. I mean, this school-to-prison pipeline has to stop. I mean, we all affected. Communities are affected. Our children are affected. Our families are affected. Our loved ones are affected. Our education system is being affected. Our juvenile systems are being affected. Kids are being locked up in droves. This has to stop, y'all. We cannot continue to go in the manner in which we've gone, because if we do, this world we're living in is going to be fast, destructive, lawless, and more of our youth are going to be dying in larger numbers than what they already are. So we need to find out what we can do as human beings to put a dent into the disparate political avenues that are created to create havoc in our societies and our cities. We need to see what we can do for our leaders of tomorrow, which are youth. They are going to be our next lawyers, they're our next doctors, our next mathematicians, our next educators, our next politicians. So we need to be able to reach these children so that there be less of them going to prison and more of them gaining an education and being forthwith and forthright in teaching those who they can influence more so than what you and I can do. So we all have a role to play, and the only way we can play that role and be effective in it is to show a sincere likelihood and sincere love and respect for our youth who, again, are dependent on us until they are old enough to start fending for themselves. But they have to have an educator in their home. They can't have crackheads in their home. They can't have a lack of education in their home. They can't have brutal parents in the home. And in large part, I just got to keep it real, a lot of our black and Hispanic families do experience those kind of traumatic realities, and it spills over into a school, into the streets, and even into the graveyard, where a lot of our youth will end up committing suicide or even being killed by an opposing foe or what have you. So, again, we need to try and do what we can to quell this very frightening situation that we call school-to-prison pipeline. Because it is very real, it's very frightening, and we're just going to ask any and everybody out there today, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to call on us, because we just want to give you something. We want to give you an opportunity to tell us what's on your minds and to also feel that you can be a part of reaching actually a conclusion. You're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. You just, there's no three ways about it. You're either for revolution, you are either you're not. You're either for the advancement of your community or you're either against it. So I'm saying this to say all of that, to say to you that talk to your children. Get them counseling. There are a lot of plenty of places out there that kids can go to counseling. I wouldn't say go to your school counselors because I believe they are pro-school rule regulation or what have you, those school officers. And, again, I've seen many youth that I've talked to tell me these school officers are rude, they're disrespectful, they're nonconforming, they don't listen to you, they think they're always right. And that's not how you win the heart, especially an unruly, a hard-to-tame child as it is in the first place. So it's all about how you know how to approach people. It's all about knowing how to get on the side of them where they feel that they can't be touched. You have to be sympathetic to some of these kids because they respond to kindness rather than roughness because they see the roughness every day at home. They see the roughness in the street. They be a part of that, and then they respond in kind because they don't have the intellect or intelligence to say, okay, well, I need to respond this way because this is going to get me in trouble if I don't. So, again, I hope that I've given y'all a little bit of something to go on tonight as far as our youth is concerned. And now, y'all, this is the hour. We have about 30 minutes left. What we do here is we talk about any and all subjects that pertain to social realities in our world today. So I want to talk a little bit about steel on crime and a few other things. Tomorrow we're going to be right here in Norman, Oklahoma, starting about 10:30. We're going to start gathering about 10:30, and 11 o'clock we'll probably start a vigil for a young man who's 36 years old, Shed Ewings. He was, again, the black man who was killed on April 9th by a motorist who says that he felt his life was threatened and he had to do what he felt he needed to do. And according to Greg Mashburn, who is the district attorney for Cleveland County, no charge would be filed because the behavior of the killer matched the stand your ground law, which, again, we've proven on many occasions that it did not, because the law requires that a person to have been justified in justified homicide must have had been attacked, not threatened to have been attacked. And evidence shows that Shed never reached the car. He never attempted to go in. He never swung at the guy. He wasn't even in distance. As a matter of fact, he was killed within 6 to 10 feet before even reaching the guy. So, again, Greg Mashburn just did that as a way of definitely opening up a floodgate for all kind of murders and tragedies to be committed against people of color, especially black folks. And, again, we are not going to tolerate that. So with this vigil, we're going to send out 36 balloons, and we're also going to light up 36 candles to coincide with the years that Brother Shed lived on this earth. And again, all this activity will take place on 11/26, which is the time we told he expired on earth. We want to give him a send off like this to let him know, man, that you are martyr and we're not going to let you die in vain. And we'll call on any one of you who want to come out. It's going to be at 4428 Northwest North Lindsay in Elm, right there in Norman, Oklahoma, right across the street from OU campus. So if you have a doubt about how to get there, just know where the OU campus is, and I'm sure you'll be able to find us, because we're definitely going to be in a group out there tomorrow at 10:30. We're going to start gathering at 10:30, and actually at 11:26, we're going to start activities and programs and various things. We're going to ask speakers who want to come out and say a few words. So, again, all of y'all come out. If you can, please show your support and respect for this family, and hopefully we can get the results and answers that we've been seeking for, and we're not going to stop until we get them. So, again, now, on another note, we'll ask Nicole to come in and speak here in just a little bit. I want to bring up another topic tonight, and that is two officers in the Lawton, two former Lawton police officers were indicted and charged with manslaughter, first-degree manslaughter, in the untimely death of Quadre Sanders, a 28-year-old black man who was killed and gunned down on December the 5th, 2021, when officers opened fire as he walked out with his hands up in the air. Obviously, that's not a lie because he would not have been charged had he had some in his hand. The officer would not be charged with first-degree murder. So to me, because he didn't have anything and he still opened fire, that's clearly premeditated, and that should have been first-degree murder. And I'm often told that it's hard to get a first-degree murder conviction from officers by a jury, so that's why they charge them with first-degree manslaughter. The system, again, is full of flaws and should not be recognized in such a manner. If you can't get respectable people to come in and do their jobs, then, again, how can they sentence people to jail and prison like us for a crime we may have committed? You just can't discriminate against the system, again, but you're discriminating because it is a wicked, vile system that's designed to protect the wealthy, the powerful. So Quadre was 28 years old again, and the officers have been indicted. Officer Robert Hinkle and Officer Nathan Ronan. Officer Nathan Ronan is the officer who actually killed Zontarius Johnson, another black youth, about a year and a half earlier, and he killed him in a foot chase. Actually told the young man to remove whatever he had within his pants. The young man reaches down, actually looks like to pull his pants up, and pop, 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 pop. So this killer here, this Nathan Ronan, R-O-N-A-N, is nothing but a cold-blooded psychotic killer, and he has targeted black unarmed black youth to kill, actually young men to kill, and he, again, needs to be given what the law allows the stiffest punishment to become, because he's a detriment to society. He makes law enforcement look bad. He's one of those culprits like that who needs to be made an example of, so the other would-be police officers who are civil servants, if they get out of line, that they know that this is what they can expect too. So again, those are some of the social issues that we're talking about tonight here in Oklahoma City. And we are, again, I'm Bob Awetapa, father of many nations. I'm your host tonight. Sister Mayat is out tonight doing her thing. And again, we definitely gave her the opportunity to do that. So again, I'm just going to be here and pick up the slack for her. I don't know if Nicole has finished cooking yet or whether she's back with children or whatever the case is. But if you are, Nicole, you can definitely tell us what you're thinking. You can also talk about, as you know, the floor is open for any topic. You can also talk about shared situation if you want to, what we plan on doing tomorrow, if you are listening.
I'm here. I saw the shooting with the Lawton officers today. I hadn't been aware of it before today. But That was horrible. That was probably one of the worst officer-involved shootings that I've ever seen. He was on the ground, and they fired again. How many times did they shoot him?
He's 8 times, and he's just sitting there. Pop, wasn't moving, even while he was down.
Yeah.
He didn't have nothing in his hand.
No, that was horrible. That was terrible.
And for the most
part, that's another
thing.
Had there not been cameras in the area?
There you go. That's the purpose. That's what I'm trying to tell y'all. I mean,
this is brand new. This has been going on for forever. It's just that we now have the luxury of having cameras most places. Someone has a phone to record. But these things have been happening forever.
Yes, and I encourage everyone to use their capabilities and their megaphones or whatever they have to record these violent, unconfrontational killings of police shootings against unarmed, innocent black folks and people of any color, regardless who you are. I don't care who you are. A civil servant, a police officer is supposed to protect and serve you, not to use the law to get an advantage over someone. And for that person to come out and wear the badge, it's no question that he's a white supremacist. There's no question in my mind. You know, he's had killed any other white man against anybody. That's just a fact. I mean, we're not just saying something to be saying it because he even killed his other unarmed black kid who was a year and a half earlier. The same guy, Ronan, Nathan Ronan, killed another black guy a year and a half earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally,
it's to the point now that when we see someone else pulled over, we need to stop. We need to stop and watch.
We need to
police them while they police us.
Thank you. Hey, I'm all for it. I'm all for getting a peace in the ballot group to where, like I said, that we can just have just different shifts of people just riding the streets all night. And whenever a police car pull in, we'll pull in, give them that distance, not interfere with them, and like I said, let them know, hey, we're here, and you're not going to, kick you one tonight. You know, I think that's the whole point. They are forcing our hands like this here, but until we stop and see and recognize what we need to do, we're getting nowhere fast because we see what's going on, but yet we don't do anything to come and make the life or conditions better. So tell me a little bit about shared situations. down, man. What do you think about now? What's going on? What are we going to do tomorrow down there? What's happening?
Tomorrow we're going to be at 428 West Lindsay Street in Norman. That is the location where Shed is shot and killed. For people that aren't aware or familiar with the area, it's going to be, it's a half a block down Lindsay Street from the stadium, Gaylord Hall. We are going to start meeting around 10:30, start festivities, you know, close to 11. At 11:26, at Shed's time of death, we will be lighting candles and releasing balloons.
Yes.
I also plan on making a very direct statement. I got my megaphone, so I don't lose my voice this time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start off, you know, the morning by telling everyone, well, good morning, it's 11 a.m., and Shed should be on his routine jog today.
Wow.
I'm hoping the megaphone brings the students out of the dorms. I want everyone to hear us.
So you said this was a ritual here. He basically just jogged off, around 11 o'clock
on Saturday.
That was just a ritual.
Every Saturday. He would have been right there where we're going to be at had he not been killed.
Wow, man, ain't that something, man? Now think about that. Isn't it? And matter of fact, you know what? Maybe they kill a new business. Say, well, I'm going to pick me one. Here's me one to get out. He's running every day. You know.
No, we don't. And we don't know anything. Maybe he had an issue with Shed from a week prior, or you know.
Yes. That's
they haven't given us anything to go off of. Nothing.
But like I said, we're definitely going to get to the bottom of it because, like I said. However they fight, you got to realize they're going to fight because they're trying to keep out information that they don't want to get out. If it gets out to the public,
yes,
it's going to cause everyone to look at the whole judicial system in its light in Norman, Oklahoma, from
yes,
the judges
and
all the way down
to the district. We're so close.
Oh, sure. You have to fight. Everything's not going to jump out at you at one time. I mean, that's not how anything starts. You know,
they bet on us getting tired, and they bet on us giving up, and they bet on us running out of support, and they bet on us running out of money, but not this time.
You.
That's not going to happen this time.
Yeah. Not this time. We are sticking and staying. We're going all the way. You know, we're just going to let people know. Again, I thank you for, you know, standing up in the family as well as letting me be a part of what y'all do because, like, as you see, this is what I do. I love being a part of this. Again, I don't have much I don't, like I said, be harsh, but I'm just going to keep it real. This Black Lives Matter is nothing but a bunch of talk, and so the NAACP and other agencies like them, if I were not lying, they would be among us and part of what we're doing. You are supposed to be civil servants. You're supposed to be out there trying to help people. You say you're out there, your organization's historically known to help, but you're not doing anything, okay? So, again, you can't have much respect for a group like those groups like that until they can show me otherwise, and they're not going to show you otherwise because they're controlled by the mighty dollar, okay? They're told what to do, when to do it, when to jump, and when to sit down, bottom line. Because if they were not, so if Black Lives Matter and a black man was killed, you should automatically have been flooding down them gates with us when we started off. They heard about it like
and it's concerning the amount of people that still, there's people in Norman that I'm still seeing comments pop up on Facebook feed that, I haven't heard about this. Why haven't I heard about this?
Yes.
I am thankful that it's starting to reach multiple social media platforms and people outside of the family and outside of friends are starting to share this information now. We're seeing multiple media outlets on the news. The Black Wall Street out of Tulsa is now investigating this, and we're seeing multiple.
And they'll be down here as well as another group up there from Tulsa. They'll be there. So
we
got a couple of agencies that's coming that way, and I just hate that we even have our groups around here. Oklahoma City is so backwards. I mean, it's just almost a laughing stock with as far as the political arena.
State is, we keep rolling it back.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to be, you know, back in the 1950s. And something that I found out, you know, by doing some research recently is that Norman was actually one of Oklahoma's last sundown towns.
Norman, Oklahoma was
a sundown town until 1967.
That's right. Sundown and cat blacks better be in the house because they were crying and noose you by the noose. You better believe it. So that's what I'm trying to tell you. All that stuff is still embedded.
Because the 67s, that means that generation of people is still here. Those people are still here.
Who are the children? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. They teach the children when they're small so they can come and take their places. You know, just like if you want your child to run on your business when you get ready to retire, what do? You teach them how to run your business. That's the same way it's a business.
Yes,
some people are killed. I mean, it's like a
children aren't
common
born
practice.
Like that. Children aren't born with hate. Children aren't born hateful.
No, they talk.
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. They teach them. Going out targeting people of color and shooting darts at them or weapons and things and blowing holes in them pictures and things. Shit, yeah. All that shit's it's really frightening and scary when you think about it. So we're definitely going to try to do what we can about it, and I'm definitely looking forward to being down there. And I think we're going to have more people who came out than last time, and yet, and in reality, we didn't really have a bad crowd the last time was there. You see what would happen when we flooded that guy's, that district attorney's office. That man was quiet. He was afraid to come out. He said, well, I've never seen anybody come out. Man. District attorney like this?
Council members and everything there.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Wow. He was really he was flabbergasted, and the guy was coming out as his one of his top aides. He seemed we wasn't just having a plan with him, man. You need to go and tell that dude to come on up.
I still couldn't tell you what Mashburn looked like if it weren't for the internet and pictures, because he has not shown his face one time.
No, he can't. He can't, man. Look.
Yes, sir.
Nicole, he can't because he can't explain his accent, and he knows he can't. This man is trying to cover up for some highfalutin official, his brother-in-law, or somebody that he's connected. He's a golf buddy. I'm telling you, something is with that.
Yes, sir.
He's a nephew of a judge or somebody.
Or something.
Yes. Yes. And as far as them trying to hold us back with from a video recording and all that, see, they hadn't heard. They haven't seen my little writings. Because I'm going down. We're going down tomorrow. And they say, hey, you know, what you mean we got to give you some more money to review this evidence? Everybody listening to us, everybody that's listening, we got to give people money to view, more money to review a tape that they want to make it hard because they know when they give it to us, it's going to show, contradict everything that that district attorney said to justify not filing charges on the killer of shit, Ewings. That's the purpose. Now they want to charge more money. Now, come on. No,
and they told me that it won't be available for weeks, but they sent an email saying it was ready. So you just had me drive down here and waste my time just to play a game?
Yes. I just told you. I told you that they just make you frustrated, make you want to try things, but then they got you. When they get you all out of your character, oh, look at her. She turned things up, and this and that. Oh, all of them the same way. That's what I'm trying to say, discipline. Look here, Nicole, those people have gone to school to be tyrants. They've gone to the psychology behind the sociology. You got to realize they went to school to be mean and vicious. No one can run an office or department like that being kind, humble, submissive. You understand what I'm saying? So everything you do, if the walls were that easy to open up, then they would be folded as a judicial agency, because a police agency, because why? They would have been exposed to lies, half-truths, deceit, and nothing, everything they did, they would have to give it up. Boom. See? So that's why they have to be, they're taught to be hard. And as a matter of fact, they're taught to do whatever they need to do. We'll handle it later on. I mean, that's policy.
Yes, well, and they've been getting away with it for so long. So, I mean, Mashburn served several terms as the DA there without people running against him. When people don't run against you, that means they feel you're so woven in that there's no way that they didn't have a chance to squeeze by.
Yes. They figured it's a waste of time.
So I wonder how many other families that this has happened to, and, you know, and I think that also should be a focus of ours, you know, moving forward, not only just
to know and find out,
you know.
All that's coming. Yeah. Just like I said, we're not going to reveal all of our statements, but we want to, like I said, we want anybody listening to this show, I'm sure we got some people from Norman that's listening to us. Anybody that saw anything on April 9th right outside of the OU campus at Lindsay and Elm Street, right in the center of a church and the school, of OU campus, please give us your number. You can remain anonymous if you want to. We know more of you out there. A bigger school is that as it is. Somebody in that dorm saw something. There's no question in my mind. A passerby saw more than what is being revealed. I know some of you are afraid, but we're calling on you. We're begging and pleading you from the depths of our deepest soul and our hearts. As for the family, please come forward. Once again, you have my word that if you came and told us about it, if you wrote us, if you called us, it would not be given out. You would not have to worry about a threat to maybe a school or students you know, your next door neighbor or someone feeling bad about you, whatever, you are coming in for the sake of humanity, do that, because if the roles were reversed, you would want someone to do that for you in your family. So please come forward. If you want to, you can call my number, area code 405-246-9089. That's my Oklahoma Coalition Against People Abuse hotline number. Area code is 405-246-9089. And we're there definitely for your convenience, your concern. And if you have a problem, a legitimate one, with your school principal or whatever, with your school professor or whatever, and you feel that we need to, because listening to our organization's name, Oklahoma Coalition Against People Abuse. I don't care if you're black, pink, purple, orange, gray, blue, or red. If you are a person, if you're a human being and you're being done wrong, we're coming. We ask for nothing. All we ask is participation, that you be a part of what we're doing. Don't leave us out there by ourselves. And everything else is going to be like you feel it needs to be, because the more you have in numbers, the more people listen to you. And we proved that the other day in front of that courthouse and that district attorney's office. So it will work. Nicole, so again, so you and brother shared, had how many children together?
Three.
And the oldest is 17, and then the other one's 14, I believe, and then the other one's 10, right?
Yes, sir.
Wow, just think about that, man. Just think about them babies. And in reality, it really hadn't set into their little minds just yet. You know what I mean? It's not, they don't have the, they can't grasp it. The older one, maybe. She's kind of, because I see tears jumping out of her here and there. But the other two, they're just happy as a lark. You know, it hasn't dawned on them yet. You know, until they get old, and then you get to explaining more to them. And when you think that you just had to explain to something that shouldn't have, a tragedy that should never have happened, I know it just irks you to just think that you got a government, a society, an agency saying it was justified. Wow.
And then they won't give us any evidence to prove that it was justified. They don't give – there's nothing there. And I'll never forget the night that I found out that it happened. His wife called me twice, so I knew something was wrong because it was later in the evening. She called me – it was about 9:15 at night. And she called me once, and I didn't answer it. She called again, and I knew, you know, somebody keeps ringing your line late at night. Something's going on.
Yes.
So I picked up the phone, and I'll never forget. She said, I don't know how to tell you this, but Shed is dead. And I'll never forget Shed is dead. And I'm, like, shocked, and I was, you know, horrified. And I didn't know what to do, because I knew I was hurt, but I was thinking, I have to deliver this message to our children.
Wow.
I had to call my mother. I called my mother first and told my mom, because I said, Mom, I need someone help, like, for support. I need someone else here when I tell them. And I'll never forget, I took them on the back porch, all three of them, me and my mother.
Oh, man.
And I'll never forget the screams and the cries and the tears.
Oh,
and that's not something that anyone should have to deal with. And then on top of that pain, now you're going to tell my babies that there's no answers for them.
Oh, man. I'm so sick and sad, and like I said, behind that. I mean, that's why I'm trying to do whatever I can to just bring some kind of
story. The DA's almost treated us like criminals because we want answers. Because we want answers for why our loved one was killed. It's like they dig deeper and deeper to justify that.
Yes,
like I said, if it was self-defense, then show us, but be empathetic, like have something, but you know it's not. I mean, and we, like you said, we're not showing all our cards at this time, but at this time, we absolutely know it's not. So.
Oh, no. We got it. Once when we reveal that, everybody's going to say, wow, what? Oh, my God, I didn't know. There's a time and place for everything, though.
Once
we get this together, And all the investigations come down, and we got all our ducks in a row, then we can call a press conference and say, okay, all right, y'all, here's y'all's copy of what we're doing. Okay, now, world, go in and get that fool out of office down there. Go in and indict that damn police this chief. All of them is in it, especially when they come to me, we're going to charge you to review a videotape. And then they're going to say, now we're going to charge you more than
$450. $450 they want. I mean, I'm going to pay it.
Who got that kind of money
time,
that the Senate elect?
They're trying to, at the same time, what they're trying to do is stretch our money thin. They're trying to make sure that we don't have the money to keep fighting. Like I said, I don't care what they think, because
I know I know the God I serve, and guess what? He's going to make sure I have it because he knows that I'm doing the right thing.
Ooh.
So I don't care what that. You can charge me whatever. You can charge me
$4,000.
I'm still going to get it.
No, we're going to get in. We're going to have to pay no $450. Trust me. I'm going to file a petition in court. Watch this.
Yes,
man, watch. Oh, man, they can't. Come on. So if I don't have it, I don't get it. That's not how law transparency works.
No, sir.
That's why
and
you have.
I did myself a favor today, and I printed off the Open Records Act, the entire act for the state of Oklahoma,
yeah.
and highlighted every portion of
yeah.
that that says that I'm entitled to that video.
Thank you. Now you're talking. It's not dependent upon whether you have money or not. It doesn't say it in there. It says entitled to transparency in our government so that the people can be satisfied and it operates in the sanctions and out of operations of its government. That's what it says.
Yes, sir.
So, therefore, we have a right to it under Title 51, and we want ours. Bottom line, whether you like it or not, we're going to get it. As a matter of fact, you pack your bag, you're no longer a police officer. You got a problem in our way. We don't mind filing a declaratory judgment against you. If that's what we need to do, come on with it because you got some people now who knows. That's why I'm trying to tell you, even if we didn't get an attorney on certain things, I know how to file stuff regardless without an attorney, but we need an attorney because it's much bigger than what Michael and his organization can have because we don't have the legal expertise behind us. See, but we do have that shout and let's get the attitude we need to, you know. So.
And we do have plenty of attorneys on our side that are willing to give us information and help. I mean, we've had a huge outreach of people that I've gotten in touch with, you know. We had when we went to have the family meeting and he didn't want to talk to us, you know, we had a defense attorney that's for Second Amendment rights that was going to tell him that this does not fit the Stand Your Ground law, a law that she defends.
He didn't want to hear that.
And she was going to say this does not fit it. But as soon as he knew that someone that knew the law was there and he couldn't bullshit the family, he doesn't want to talk.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand.
Now you're talking.
Yes,
ooh, Nicole, you right on point. Wow. You hear what I'm saying? He knew that she was on an even level with him, went to same schooling and education that he had, same law of interpretation as he does.
And if you're operating within the law, why are you afraid of someone else that knows the law to be right there with you?
Bam. You know, so he does that because he can't lie to them because he knows to lie to them. They have the book. They can take him to the paperwork. They can take him to the motion.
Yes,
they can take him to the
He was
going to
throw out, you know, all this legalese that he knew the family didn't understand and expect us to be like, oh, okay, you're right. No, we're not going to show up like that. We're not going to show up like that. No.
Yeah. So you're definitely on point. And again, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure we're going to have a pretty good crowd. And I'm glad you brought your mega horn because, like I said, I feel like getting down tomorrow. You know what I mean? I mean, shit, hold back. You know, we're just going to give the 1-2 punch. Yeah, sure, like I said, people going to really feel that they're going to feel the fire. You know, that's what I like.
Well,
doing. I like
you know that next week is finals for the OU students. So we're doing it right on the right weekend because they'll be gone the following weekend. But they're all going to be in their dorm studying because they got finals coming up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to interrupt everybody studying, like, hey, come listen to this. Hey, what did you see? You know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Who killed Shed? You know?
And as a matter of fact, too, and mark it on your calendar, next Friday, we want to go down there to OU and ask them, why have y'all not come out with a public statement? My kid or child might want to come to the school, and this is how y'all would have thought about him? I mean, you're a prestigious school, man. I mean, what are y'all doing going with this evil, wicked debauchery of idiocy? What's with you people? I mean, I don't understand that. And right out front of you.
They should have at least released a statement of condolences to the family.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, damn it. You ain't got to say nothing.
They haven't even offered those students counseling that saw it, from what I'm hearing.
No.
People coming out of the university.
That's what I'm telling you.
So what about your students? You don't think that's traumatic for an 18 or 19-year-old to see a man gunned down and dying on the ground, bleeding out all over the street? But you guys haven't offered them anything? You haven't offered the family condolences? That makes you wonder. That makes you wonder real stuff. Like, what are you saving face? Who are you saving face for? Is there someone person tied to your university in some type of way?
Wow, yes.
You know?
Yes, yes.
And I've been told that there's been reporters and people who write in the newspaper have reached out to administration and gave them a deadline, and they didn't meet that deadline, and they didn't return it, and they didn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I wonder, it makes me wonder if this person is tied to OU, because I know OU's gun policy. It's available on their website. Their gun policy clearly states that there's only two exceptions to carry on their university, and this person was leaving the university because that's all that's there. He was on the university. He was about 3 feet maybe off the university, if he was even off university property when this happened. And so their gun policy says two people can claim exemptions, law enforcement officers or anyone that the university has pre-approved and given permission to carry. So I think that that's where their fear lies, is that if they gave this person permission, then you now have liability in the death of Shed.
Yes. I'm with
you. There's something there.
yes. And if it was not so, Nicole, don't you know if I knew I was right, I would give you everything that you asked for so you can get out of my hair, if I knew I was right?
And just to
if
be
I
a
knew,
good person,
in the matter
like,
of fact, you wouldn't have
be...
to come to me and ask me anything, because I know I'm right here, ma'am. Let me
yes,
show
sir.
You. Bam, bam, bam. So what is that telling
yes,
you?
Sir.
I have something to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So, how can it not be? How can I not? How can
and the university
not,
does own cameras that point at that street. University
yeah,
owns cameras.
We saw
direction.
Them. We saw them.
Yes, sir.
Yes. They have to protect the students, because if they didn't, they can be sued for negligence. Nicole?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And, like, that area is right there by the student housing. Those girls are walking late at night back to the dorm.
Oh,
you're not telling me that there's not surveillance in the area. I don't believe that. And that's what Detective Jackson told the family, lead detective, that there's no surveillance. Excuse me?
Oh, come on. Oh, man. You see,
yes, sir.
I mean, those are the things, Nicole. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Those are the things. And for the next, after we do the interviews tomorrow and all that, we're going to do probably an evening show so we can give our audience, because we got a couple people who want us to do something tomorrow and let them know. So we'll do a broadcast tomorrow after we do everything down there and let them know how the event turned out. That's what they want to know. We
yes,
have to get
sir.
The people there because they requested it, you know, because their
yes,
interest, because a lot of them can't be down there. They would want to be in other states and things. I'm telling you, Nicole, we have a large audience here, even on my radio
yes,
broadcast. They love what we're doing because I give them an opportunity as well to ask questions, to be a part of the groups, to put on events that they may want in Philadelphia, Chicago, Norman, or Tennessee. You see what I'm getting at?
And any support is good support. Just because you can't be here, talk about it. You can share it on social media. You can just talk in that normal conversation with people around you, like, hey, have you heard about this? You know, all of that. It's all support.
Yes. And I tell you what, Nicole, believe it or not, y'all might not realize it, but Shed's being a martyr basically started a new movement here in Oklahoma.
Yes, sir.
Basically started a
yes,
new
sir.
Movement. We have everybody
from
several
counseling. Other activist groups stepping in now and making comments. And
what did I just tell you? Yes. Because this was, of course, this opened the door for, like you just said, Nicole. Anybody, I can argue with you, and you just take a step toward me, I can kill you because I was afraid of you. That's not,
yes,
come
sir.
On, man. You can't come with some
nope.
shit like that, man. You know how many people, like I said, would be
totally
dead.
That's the interpretation of the shooter, because we could all say we're in fear, so we shot someone. That doesn't.
There it goes. He just said it. If you walk toward
more than
me,
that.
Man.
If that's the precedent he's going to set, he's going to have some sick-minded individuals writing down a list, putting some names
oh,
on the list.
Yeah. Come on now. And that's what he's afraid of. That's why he's not liking the highlight we're constantly highlighting his decision on. We're not supposed
yes,
to deal with this.
And nobody ever tests his authority. Look, nobody runs against him.
No,
he thinks that he's untouchable.
No. He's not used to the real public entities like ourselves, Nicole, who are not associated or connected with government entities. The government entities are afraid of him, not
yes,
us.
Sir. Yes, sir.
See? This is his problem. We showed him we're not afraid, and we went to his own house, which is at the district attorney's office, which is our house.
That he rents,
that's why
that he rents from the people.
Say, now you're talking to me, doggone. I'll put you in there so I can move your ass out of there, too.
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. You don't act right. We ain't through with your ass yet, because we're going to go to the attorney general. I told you,
Look at Nicole. I told you, I know the steps. That's why they say, oh, damn, oh, Mike Watts. Oh, man, damn. But it'd have been nice him to stay out of the way. We ain't worried about them other groups and shit. They ain't finna do nothing but talk. Damn, Mike Watts. Oh, man. Here it goes.
Yes, sir.
So this is why I said they know I'm going to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General got to answer us because, like I said, we're going to write a petition up. And we ain't going to fill out one day. I'm talking, we got to go to the grocery store, people passing by, and people coming out. The best thing to do is have somebody right there at that school because somebody's going to want to say, yo, my God, I saw that. I didn't see who it was, but let me sign that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to always be somebody that want to be a part of it.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? And when we can catch them right there when shifts start changing, when they get ready to go to lunch, as you see that time, we were walking out there, everybody start moving about. I guarantee it's going to be something to stop and say, and guess what? The buzz will go around the school because they'll see us standing out there. Hey, what are they doing out there? Oh, they collecting sickness. Oh, for real? Over there killing. You see, that's what I'm saying. You know, it starts
and they'll
buzz.
Be gone for a couple weeks until next semester.
Yeah.
And the next semester, their first week there, we're going to greet all the new students.
Yeah.
The same.
Yeah.
Did you hear about what happened on this campus? Are you sure you want to go to school here? Are you safe? Are you safe?
Thank you.
You know, they got a killer out here with a gun on this campus. Are you safe?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, like you said, he may have even been a student. To that extent, we don't know. Maybe his sister's and her brother. That's why they're trying to keep that out, Nicole, because they don't want a connection to the school on something that big because all the scandals and racism the school has been involved with over the years. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
They had frat brothers come to me and hanging people with nooses around their necks and all this old stuff. And, man, I'm telling you, I've rallied before on that shit. I'm trying to tell you. All that's that. Those are scandals that they no longer need to be. And just like you remember about the OU former professor, David Boehm, was accused of raping students and things.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, see what I'm saying? Those are big name scandals, man. I mean, he was the governor of Oklahoma at one time. And yet he's a school professor, a school dean, and raping students? Wow.
A sexual predator. Mm-hmm.
Wow. You see what I'm saying?
And I'm sure that time after time, until someone had enough, time after time, I'm sure he was protected. I'm sure he was protected.
Oh, God damn it. Yeah. Hell, he's got the DA's. He got DAs like the damn Mashburn protecting him and other damn attorney generals and stuff. You're talking about a major school, one of the top-notch schools and universities in
and
the world.
Funny. Well, it's not funny. It's not funny, but it's odd that these big stories from one of the, like you said, the most prestigious universities, the most well-known OU's football program is the most well-known in the country. They win national championships constantly.
Oh, man.
All of this,
nine.
Nobody hears about this on a national level. Why isn't nobody hearing about this on a national level? Like, how are we keeping everything so hush?
Yes. Because they know an investigation is going to lead to a connection to OU's university. I'm telling you. That's why they're not coming out with a public statement and anything, because they fear it's going to open Pandora's box.
I will say, I did find a, you know, the DA graduated from OU.
Well, I'll be damned. Well,
he's
okay,
alumni.
Then.
Yes, sir.
Well,
he's an alumni.
Damn.
I found that out today.
Wow.
He's an interesting character if anyone wants to take the time and look up, you know, Greg Mashburn.
Yeah,
he's got some interesting stories back there behind him.
Wow. I tell you what, give us, like I said, about 6 months, and we'll be ready to reveal that information. Boy, and they're going to be really, really shocked and upset. And guess what? It's going to hurt his chance for winning the next attorney seat. Once this is all revealed, because you know what? Because he would have betrayed the people who had trust in him doing the right thing.
Not only that, but he didn't uphold his oath to his office.
That's what I'm saying. He's betrayed him. Yes, he's betrayed the public.
Yes,
so
sir.
Therefore, you tricked us, man. We believe that you were down for crime and putting people away who violate the women's rights and things. And then, like you said, we're going to expose him, letting rapists go and all this. I mean, see, you know, y'all don't know. I got people on it already. Nicole, y'all got the wrong one here. I don't play. Yeah, I told you, I do not play. Just like when you heard me say I'm going to go down and laud them, people say, oh, thank you, sir, for coming down, Mike. Well, yeah, oh, man, we know. Thank you. Because they know when I go down and police, they say, oh, shit, here he come. They're going to be up there, damn, man. I like that. Damn it, fear who in the hell y'all see when I come down and damn it, recognize me. I'm a citizen. I pay you $1,000.
Yes, sir. Everybody recognizes you. I saw your picture on Facebook. You couldn't even disguise yourself going into the courthouse.
Yeah, I tried to do that shit on purpose. They say, "Oh no, man, you should have put a plastic bag." They would, even then, we'd have known your height or hand or something.
Mhm. As soon as you got to talking and moving your hands, they'd have been like, "That's Mike Washington right there."
I just feel good about doing it. I love having people, man. I mean, that's just what God called me for. And again, like I said, I don't charge a dime. I go in for the unity and the community, and I want others to fight. Let me tell you something, Nicole. We got about 5 minutes. I got to get ready to get off. But let me tell you something. If we just had people right now today with all those big names, like NAACP, Black Lives Matter, don't you know if we collectively came together every time something happened, then other people would stop shit. They would actually stop because they would have standing room only. The car streets would be blocked off and things. You see what I'm saying? Like they do in Denver and Philadelphia and shit when you see TV. They'd be blocking highways and shit. If we can ever come to that degree.
But we have an unfortunate law in the state of Oklahoma now that Governor Stitt signed in where you can actually run over protesters that are in the street.
Uh-huh.
That's disgusting.
Look at that.
So it's a path, another path to murder. It's another path for murder.
Yes, I told you. These people are murderous ass, scandalous ass, no good ass fools because of protecting the wealthy that runs the society and corporations.
Yes, sir.
That's what they're protecting, the legislators. They're protecting the people that own the big newspaper companies, the big Kerr McGee Corporation, the big oil companies, the big store tycoons. That's what they're protecting. So, and they're going to pass any law that's designed to disrupt any you and my. In other words, if we silence y'all's voice from protesting against us, well, we can do what we want now. Ain't nobody going to come together on us. But they can't stop us from gathering. So regardless of how they say it, we still going to gather.
Constitutional
one right. That's right. Thank you. Thank you. And what did I tell everybody? It shocked them. I said, man, y'all, come on. We can go in there. Everybody's like, man, you sure? I said, man, let me show you. Matter of fact, I'm going to be the first one to show you you can go in there. What you mean, can you go up here? This is your house, man. He's renting from you. Matter of fact, you pull your rent from him and tell him you're going to go up on your rent, and he got to go. And yes, they started laughing. But I'm just saying.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but I won. But you see, they feel good and know, well, Michael Watson, no, oh, okay. He's one of them people. He's not just going to get us in trouble and have us believe in something that's not. No, I can't do that because that's not what a leader does. A true one doesn't, that is. I have to know what I'm saying, Nicole. I got to be right. Because if I'm not, then the faith in me is all over with. I've established too big of a congregation following to come in and let some error like that happen. You know?
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, look, let me say, let me give 1 second, I'll get back to you. This is Baba Witaba right here, Father of Many Nations on People Power Radio. As y'all know, tonight we had earlier discussed school to prison pipeline. What is the government doing targeting our youth to incarcerate them into the juvenile system and then migrate, actually progressing to the jail system and on in the United States? We're getting ready to close. We got 90 seconds, y'all. But again, if anyone out there, please tell your loved one you love them tonight because tomorrow may not be promised to them. And, again, if y'all got a problem, man, you need to talk to it. If you need got an idea for a show, y'all know to call me, Baba Witaba, right here at Oklahoma Power People Radio. And that is area code 405-246-9089. I'm talking fast because we don't have much time, y'all, but I hope y'all can keep up with me. Again, that's area code 405-246-9089. This is your show. I'm your host with your boy was not here tonight because she had other assignments she had to do. So, again, I took up a slack. And when she gets back, I want a hamburger. I want a Coke. And, no, let me just say, yeah, I'm having fun because I feel good. My host tonight, again, actually helped me. I was Nicole from up there here in Edmond. And, again, we thank you so much for being on the show again. And we're going to let you have a parting shot if you want to. And, everybody, if we're off the air, you know why, because we got about 60 seconds. So go ahead, Nicole, take us out of here with some last words. Again, y'all, we're getting ready to go. I guess she's had to go do something. Again, everybody, thank y'all for tuning in with us tonight. Be blessed, and may God see. We'll see y'all tomorrow night. We're going to talk about a little bit of things about what we did down in Norman and bring it to the idea to people. Be blessed, everybody, and I'm gone. Have a blessed night, and pray for me, and I will pray for you. May God bless and keep you. May allow his face to shine upon you and give you peace. Good night, everybody. Thank you for joining. Goodbye. All right, Nicole, I'll talk to you a little later.